and welcome to today's Job Seeker Broadcast. Our topic is cold calling, the secrets of cold calling 102. If you've been job hunting for some time and you've read any of the literature out there to get help, you've certainly heard about the need to beat the pavement, knock on doors, and press the flesh. Well, the advice you're going to get today about cold calling may truly surprise you. To help me discuss this topic, I'm joined by a special guest co-host, George Dutch. George is out of Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. And hello, George. Are you there today?
Hello, John. Yes, I am. It's good to be with you once again.
Yes, and it's certainly good to have you. This is going to be quite a lively show today. George has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1992, and that's over 20 years. Career transition company is entitled Job Joy. He hosts his own weekly radio show entitled Career Connection. George also does consulting for Fortune 500 companies, all levels of government agencies, nonprofits, ministry organizations, and small business firms. He has authored two publications, Job Joy and Job Bootcamp. Now, today, for the first 15 minutes of our show, George and I will talk about our topic, Cold Calling 102. Following that, we'll take a short break, and then we'll start answering questions that we've received regarding job seeker issues. Okay, George, well, let's get into this topic, and as you and I have previously prepared for this, we're ready to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of cold calling. But first, let's remind our listener that several weeks ago, I and Counselor Peter DePauli did a broadcast on Cold Calling 101. And we found that this topic was so critical that we decided we needed a 102. 101 focused on the biggest barrier to contacting employers and how to overcome that. And that biggest barrier, we concluded, was just flat out fear. Fear of contacting a stranger, didn't know what to say, don't know what to do, don't like to get embarrassed, keep putting it off, and then nothing happens. I think we've got some fresh air for our listeners today, but different than our first broadcast, we're going to focus on the actual technique of cold calling, or can I say, we're really not going to advance the idea that you need to cold call. We're going to promote the idea of warm calling, right, George?
Yes, we are, John.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we're really not advocating that a job seeker get out there and talk to people where they have no introduction. So a difference between a cold lead and a warm lead is a warm lead, somebody you know has given you the name of someone to contact, and you're borrowing that relationship to get the ball rolling. And if there's one word that represents success in contacting individuals, contacting employers, it's relationships. It's all about developing relationships. So, George, as we begin to peel the banana here, peel the onion, how do you help clients overcome what seems to be just an incredible barrier? You testified that your clients are intimidated, hesitant. I certainly experienced that. And between the two of us, we've got 60 years of helping individuals. What do you do to help clients overcome this barrier of contacting individuals?
Yeah, excellent question, John. The first thing I do with my clients is I demonstrate to them how much they're focusing on only one part of a conversation or a relationship. They tend to be focused on themselves. I think that's one of the drivers of the fear that seems to overwhelm people when it comes to the concept of cold calling. People take on too much themselves. They think that everything relies on them, their performance in making their call, the ability to make the call. Everything relies on them. They're only focused on one half of the conversation of the relationship. When the truth is, they're making that call because they're not in a position to hire themselves. If they were in a position to hire themselves, i.e. start their own company and become their own CEO and hire themselves as the CEO, they wouldn't need to make a cold call. They're making a cold call because they're job searching and they're depending on somebody else to hire them. And they need, I think, to focus on the needs and priorities of that person at the other end of the call, that other half of the relationship in a job search, the hiring manager, the potential employer. We need to focus primarily on their needs and priorities simply because they're in the position of hiring. And once people understand that and they understand that most managers are actually waiting for them to make that call because it makes their life easier, once they really grasp the reality of that situation, it's a lot easier for people to do what we're calling cold calling, which is actually what we want to describe more accurately as warm calling. The purpose of calling somebody is to establish rapport and nurture that rapport into a relationship so that that manager will want to hire you. And we must remember, what I tell my clients is they must remember that managers do want to hire. They have to hire for a number of very simple reasons. First of all, they can't do all the work themselves. They need employees to do a lot of the work in order to reach corporate goals and objectives. They need to replace some of the people they have now for one reason or another. And they also need to hire people because of turnover. There's a lot of turnover in the American workplace. So when my clients understand these simple drivers of hiring, they feel a lot more comfortable, a lot more equipped, and a lot more motivated about making calls.
Yeah, so you're suggesting that by taking the initiative to contact someone that you previously don't know, you're in a way, you're doing them a favor. And we're trying to clear away this mystique that for an organization to stay in business, it doesn't matter if it's a nonprofit or a for-profit organization, that organization to stay alive has to grow. And in order to grow, it has to have good people. And the last thing an employer wants to do, they hate doing this, is posting a notice and getting flooded with calls and resumes that they have to paw through. It's a much easier process for the employer to get to know someone without the formality and the threat of a, quote, job interview situation. So I think where you and I agree, and we're trying to take the listener, is let's start with the process of beginning a relationship, making it easy on the employer, because they do need to have a traffic of new folks all the time if they're going to stay in business, and it just ends up being a numbers game. There's a 25% turnover in the labor force, and so that means if you contact 10 companies, well, 2.5 of them are going to need somebody. And of course, you want to break down the numbers, you know, how many employees in that company and so on. But those are the tried and true proven principles. The other thing we're saying is in defining a warm call, we want to contact someone that a friend, an acquaintance, a colleague, a former coworker has said to you, so-and-so works for XYZ company, and they're a good friend of mine. And then you contact that person. And that person then directs you to the department head where you are seeking a position. Let's go from that, George, to some of the, quote, how-tos. So what happens? Here we have someone. All right, I'm sold. I'm going to start contacting employers. And first step, obviously, is we got to go contact our whole list of friends, acquaintances, and so on. I like to toss a number out and say, your home if you can get 40 contacts. That's a high number, 20 minimum. And so our listener is motivated. They've got some warm contacts to call. And so they're on the phone and they're making those calls. Wait a minute. The person does not answer at the other end. What do you do?
Which is a very common occurrence these days for anybody. When you phone somebody, you often, most often, get voicemail rather than a live person at the other end of the phone.
Right.
So what I coach my clients to do, I counsel them to not leave a voicemail the first time they call. In terms of a tactic, the strategy, of course, is to get somebody in person on the line and engage them in a conversation. The tactic is you want to get that person on the line, the sooner the better, but you may run into voicemail or other obstacles. So what I encourage people to do is to try to call at different times of the day. Now, remember that most managers are decision makers. They spend a good part of their working day in meetings, going from one meeting to another where issues are discussed and processed and decisions are made. So it's unlikely you're going to get them at their desk, he or she, during core business hours, let's say from 9 until 4 p.m. or 9 until 5. So you might want to try earlier in the day, starting at 7 a.m., between 7 and 9, and later in the day, between 5 and 7. That's often when managers are sitting at their desk doing their administrative work, and you're more likely to catch them at that time during the day. So I encourage my clients not to leave a voicemail the first time, but to try three or four times at different times of the day. And if they still don't get them after three or four tries, then they could leave a voicemail.
Yeah, and if you leave a voicemail, I agree that voicemail is almost a wasted breath. But if you do leave a voice message, our recommendation is use the name of the person that the two of you know that are in common. You start out by saying, Ralph Smith gave me your name. And Ralph Smith, just right off the bat, Ralph Smith is the friend of a friend. And so now they're going to listen. Oh, yeah, I know Ralph. And then off you go. Now, another thing I would
excellent
ask you.
Excellent point, and I'm sorry I overlooked it, but our listeners should not. That is a very important point, is that as soon as you mention the name of the referral, especially if that person is liked, trusted, and respected by the manager, that automatically draws you into their inner circle of peers, and it gives you the credibility you need to finish that call.
George, we're going to go to a break. Let's pick it up later.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. We do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Do you really think that anyone, regardless of education, present job, or a reentry homemaker with no current marketplace skills, can really believe that there is something special out there?
Yes, Evan, I believe they can find a fulfilling career and get hired to do it.
You know, John, as I've talked with you about career advancement, I've been thinking about all those thousands of mid-career adults who go back to school to earn a college degree or even an advanced graduate degree, and yet...
Well, yeah, Evan, and yet they don't get hired in their field after they finish the degree, right?
Right. Yeah, it seems so sad.
Well, there is a brighter picture. Advanced education can really pay off if only the student took the time to find his or her sweet spot and then choose a degree which complements the career choice.
Boy, that really makes sense. Can we talk more about this during the next break?
Certainly.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast and pick up where we left off.
And we're back talking about cold calling and how to succeed. And if you were listening to the first portion of the show, you find out by now that we are not advocating cold calling. We're advocating warm calling. To talk about this topic today, I'm assisted by George Dutch. George is one of our top 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. George is located in Ottawa, Canada, and his company is Job Joy. You can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. And George, just before the break, we were looking at one of the first techniques, so to speak, of mastering, overcoming this issue of warm calling, and that's what happens if the person doesn't pick up on the phone. They're just not there. Or they choose not to answer. One thing I would add is if you're calling for a manager, most likely that manager has a secretary, and I generally ask the secretary, what is a good time of day when so-and-so is not disturbed, when he would be free or she would be free to chat for just a few minutes. And that tends to give a little advantage. I try to make that secretary my friend. A good secretary will then say something like, what's the purpose of this call? Why are you calling? And you want to use the name Ralph Smith, who's a good friend, mutual friend between us, encouraged me to call Barbara Jones. And that should be sufficient to get you there. George, let's go to a next point. Here we are. Our job seeker finally gets through, gets the person on the phone, and they're trying to get an appointment. Well, what do they say to get the appointment? Here they are. They're talking to someone they've never met before. They have a friend in common, Ralph Smith. What do they say?
Yes, that's a very good question. And I'm not sure it can be answered with any kind of cookie-cutter approach because everybody's different. Everybody's targeting different kinds of jobs. They're in different situations. They're talking to different industries and companies and individuals. But I think we have to recognize that there's a certain art of conversation or of rapport building that goes with these kind of calls. And some people have a knack for it. So if you can think of a friend that's really good at establishing rapport with people quickly and easily over the phone, listen to them. Listen to how they do that when they make calls to people that are strangers or that they don't know. And you can also YouTube these kind of calls to pick up some tips. But the main thing is to contact somebody. In order to get an appointment, make sure they understand your relationship with the mutual contact. Make sure that they understand that it's a good one, a solid one. And then emphasize to them that you'd really like to meet with them for advice. You're not in a position yet to ask for a job because you don't even know if there is a job, and there probably isn't. So you're asking for advice. People, generally speaking, enjoy being asked for advice. Advice doesn't cost anything. There's no risk attached to it. People like to share their knowledge and expertise. So it's always good to ask for advice, and you need to ask for advice around a particular topic that is relevant to the listener, to the employer's industry or sector. And so you want to ask for advice on a industry topic. For example, whatever industry that manager is in, you might want to go to the websites of industry conferences or conventions and see what kinds of trends and issues are tracking on those conference websites, because that's why managers go to conferences and conventions, to stay up to date with trends and issues that might have an impact on the way their organization does business or operates or the way they do their job as a manager. So you want to stay current with the kinds of issues and trends relevant in that sector. And so if you ask a question around one of those trends or issues, it's likely to hit a button of that manager who's also thought about those things or relevant to those things and likes to share their knowledge and experience about it. So when you ask for advice, this is often a great way to open the door to getting an appointment.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. And maybe we're both saying the same thing. You're using the word advice, and I use, when I coach our clients, I'm doing some research, and I'd like to get your opinion. And yet the topic is the same, just as you were highlighting. We want to get on the other side of the fence and look at it from the employer's standpoint. Is there a topic that that employer is very intrigued about? Yes, there is. Any topic that has to do with growth or stability or how to fend off some trend that is injuring, harming, undermining the industry, those are right at the front of every manager. And the way you discover those topics, I call them impact issues, is you go to the professional association that that industry belongs to. So if you're contacting a newspaper, you're going to contact the American Association of Newspapers. And you want to find out the trends and issues and problems and confrontations that are going on as it relates to the success of newspapers today. And there should be one, two, or three. There always is something. And you're calling the manager to get his or her advice, or you're calling saying you're doing research and like to get their opinion about, and you're inserting that topic. The whole idea here, I think, is we're trying to get that manager to start talking before they look at their clock or schedule and say, I'm too busy. They're already into it because you've done such a good job in picking the topic, and it just draws them right in. And George, I think this is really wise, as you were saying. We got to look on the other side. What's in it for the employer? It's not all about me, the caller. It's really about that employer and how to get that person's attention. Okay, now we've got...
Just before we leave it, I wanted to add another point. For some people, it's also very appropriate to raise an issue of commonality. If they have spoken to their referee, the person that's referring them to the manager, mm-hmm. and they know something in common, you know, they have a similar interest in a sport or a social activity or somebody in common, they might want to break the ice at the beginning of the conversation by raising that particular commonality, whether it's a sport or a common activity, or they're fans of something or other, they know somebody in common. That's a great way to break the ice and to build some rapport with somebody that you've never met before you rush into the business issues. It's sometimes appropriate to establish that personal contact, to find that common sure. ground between the person that's referred you and the three of you that are making up this
yeah.
this relationship. And yeah, the other thing I wanted to mention, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, if Ralph and the person you're calling both graduated from Western University, and you happen to have attended there too at a different year,
right.
that certainly would be a huge link that would warm up the relationship very quickly. I think that's what you're getting at, right?
That's what I'm getting at. The beginning of the call is very important, establishing that rapport. We shouldn't rush through it, because everything that transpires after that depends on that first good impression, that initial warm contact, that establishing of rapport. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the time. You know, make sure early on in the conversation that you tell the employer, the person that you're contacting, that, you know, you're not going to take up a lot of their time. You'd like to meet with them. You promise you won't spend more than 20 minutes with them. You know they're busy, but you'd really like to meet with them for 20 minutes if that's okay. The reason you ask for 20 minutes, of course, is they don't know you. They're unlikely to let you cut into their productive time. But no matter how busy someone is, they usually have 20 minutes because they have to take what during the day? Some kind of break.
Yeah.
Lunch break, coffee break, exercise break, mental health break. So they're more likely to agree to a 20-minute meeting than they are to a 60-minute meeting when they don't know you.
Yes. And since we've asked for 20 minutes, I think it's very important that we keep it 30 minutes or under and not overstay our welcome. So let's move on to the next point. So Here we are. Our job seeker has called, has succeeded in setting up an appointment. They go to meet the person at their place of work. What is the goal for the time together? What is our job seeker supposed to talk about and do during this initial meeting?
Yeah, another excellent question. I always encourage my clients to remember before they go to the meeting, they're not going there to get a job. That's not the purpose of the meeting. The purpose of the meeting is to establish rapport, deepen the rapport with the person that they've initiated contact with over the phone. It's very unlikely that somebody's going to hire you in the first 20-minute meeting. I mean, let's just be realistic about it. What's realistic is to establish rapport with that person. Remember, they're not going to hire you until they like you and they feel safe with you. And that takes a bit of time to nurture that kind of a relationship. So when you go and meet with them, you're raising some of the issues you talked about on the phone to warm up the conversation. But your goal is to learn more about the organization's goals and objectives. You know, why do they exist? What's their core business? What are their corporate goals and objectives over the next few years? And then what kinds of challenges are they facing? What kinds of impact issues, as you mentioned earlier, pressure points, problems are they facing in achieving those corporate goals and objectives? You want to get the conversation turned around that way. What are some of the questions that you encourage people to ask in that first meeting, John?
Well, I try, and I think you and I had talked about this in preparation for today's show, is either we're going on the track of asking advice about one of these mega trends or foreign competition or the sagging economy. I mean, the sagging economy has really worked for a good 2 years. I'd like to get your advice on how your industry is attempting to get ahead of the sagging economy. According to my research, I have found this, this, and this, and then there's another group that believe this, this, and this, and you've just pulled that person right into a hot topic. They're really impressed that you're up on what they struggle with every day, and they're just going to jump right in and give you their 2 cents worth. Now, both of us are saying to the job seeker, you are not to take a resume to this meeting. You are not to sell yourself. You don't go explain how great you are and how many graduate degrees you have and years of experience. You're there to start a relationship, and you're there to have a meaningful conversation that opens the door for a second meeting. And think about it. Boy meets girl, and on the first date, will you marry me, is just not appropriate. We'll pick it up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you suggested that more education can be a curse as well as a blessing.
That's right, Evan. If a person chooses more education to acquire skills they don't have...
You mean innate skills they don't have.
Right. Someone who thinks they can gain hardwiring skills through education, well, I'm sad to say that for this person, there will be limited career success.
Hmm. So give us the positive side of the coin.
Well, the good side is that by choosing wisely, that is, the right career, an advanced degree can work wonders and even help the person get hired with the employer of their choice.
Well, that sounds encouraging. And I know you have more on this subject, like how does one know if a new career is really right for them and worth all that additional education?
That's right, Evan. We can discuss that on our next break, how to know for sure.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's go back to our broadcast.
And we're talking today about how to succeed in cold calling. And the first thing we're saying here, don't do cold calling. Do warm calling. No one likes to do cold calling. And if you don't like it, you're going to fail at it. So just forget it and do warm calling. But the point is, you must be proactive in contacting employers and not just sit around looking at vacancy opportunities. Well, vacancy opportunities only represent about 20% of employment possibilities. I'm joined today in discussing this by Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. Is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see George's picture smiling there, and his bio on our website. George, just before the break, we were talking about what a person should say and discuss when they actually get the appointment to talk to the employer. This is that very first time. Any other things to add before we go to the next piece of advice?
No, I think we should move on.
The next step is closing that first meeting. And this is so essential. I would say half of my clients fail to do this. I assume, George, you've got a high percentage as well. What should the job seeker do to close the meeting in order to continue this momentum that is going to hopefully redeem and find a hidden job?
We must remember that for an employer, when they say we don't have any jobs today, they mean it. There's no jobs today. But there will be jobs in 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months. There will be job opportunities because of the things that drive hiring. As I mentioned earlier, they need work that has to be done. They need to replace some of the people they have now. And there's turnover. That's why there's always jobs, and organizations are always hiring because of these essential hiring drivers. So a job seeker has to remember that in that first meeting. So they want to leave the door open to future meetings. Sometimes the employer will make that easy. They will say to you, look, I'm so sorry, but I have to go to this next meeting. I'm having a very busy day. I'm sorry we can't talk longer than this 20 minutes, but please stay in touch. When people say please stay in touch, they mean it. It's not a polite dismissal. They're not trying to get rid of you. They mean it. So you need to respond by saying something like, you know, you've given me a lot to think about. Can I go away and digest all this? Could we talk again in 2 or 3 weeks? What a great idea. Here's my business card. And then in 2 weeks, you've had time to think about what transpired in the conversation, some of the issues that came up, and you can formulate some more questions you want to ask for advice or how you can nurture the relationship further. And you call back in 2 weeks and ask for another 20 minutes. If the employer doesn't open the door, you need to open it yourself by doing the same sort of thing, saying, this has been a very interesting conversation. My head is spinning. I've got so much to think about. I'm sure there's lots of other things I'd like to know. Could I call you again in 2 weeks? Could we talk some more? This kind of thing will, again, indicate to you whether or not you've established rapport with that employer. And if they do keep that door open or open an invitation open to meet with them again, that's a sure sign that you've established rapport. And now your job is to nurture it, deepen it, so that you're in the right place at the right time when a job opportunity comes up.
Yeah, you've earned yourself a chair in the auditorium, and you're the only person in the auditorium. So when a position comes along, you're the only person who's going to know about it because you've established this relationship. So we're coaching our job seeker that it is worth the agony and the time to develop relationships with decision makers, and you have to break the ice, and the best way to do it is to use a friend of a friend and work your way through that process, get the appointment. When the appointment is over, you ask, if I have additional questions, would it be all right to get back to you? You're closing the appointment with permission to get back. Now, George, I encourage our clients to write a thank you note that very day or no later the next day to just add a nice, a thank you for the time, but it's a reminder that the person said, yes, you can contact me back for additional comments or thoughts regarding the topic. Now, let's go to the second appointment, and let's provide for our listener the topic. What is it that is the issue, the goal of the second appointment? Now, I just before the break, I tossed out the analogy, boy meets girl. A boy would be a total fool to say on the first meeting, will you marry me, or are you thinking of getting married, or can we start a relationship? I mean, people just don't do that. They're used to kind of warming up and getting acquainted and getting familiar. That's all we're doing here. And so the second meeting, rapport is already established. The goal of the second meeting is to find out, are there any changes? Is anything growing? What is happening in that company that might spell opportunity? And normally it's growth or change that spells opportunity. We already know there's turnover. We already know that people are retiring, all those issues. But the real key that spells opportunity is when you know this company is on the cutting edge. It is growing their market share, and they are succeeding. They figured something out, how to bust through the slow economy, and you're hearing that loud and clear. You know they're going to be hiring. And what that means is you want to stay with this company, make it a priority, and keep visiting with that manager. George, any other comments before we turn to our job seeker questions about that second appointment?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's really probing a little deeper about what's going on in the industry, in the sector, and in the company, how the company is responding to those changes in the industry sector, and whether or not that means, as you said, growth in the company or changes of some kind that foster jobs, job creation.
Yes. Just in case we got some doubting Thomases out there, do you have any final tips in case the person is just, they're exasperated and attempting to make these phone calls, it's just not getting through?
Yes, I would just ask them to look at whether or not they're exasperated because of their personal experience, it just seems so intimidating, overwhelming, fearful to make these calls, that they're so focused on themselves and what they need to do, their 50% of the call, that it's basically paralyzing them with the fear. And to remember that they're only one half of the equation. The other half is that employer is at the other end of the phone waiting for you to call, waiting for you to make their life easier, waiting for you to add value to their company, waiting for you to help them solve a significant problem to help them achieve their corporate goals and objectives. They really need you a lot more than you think.
Yeah, excellent. And wouldn't it help to send a letter? If trying to make phone calls isn't working, how about just sending a letter? It's so novel today to send a letter. 25 years ago, letters were common, but today emails are the deal. Receiving a letter is kind of a special thing today.
It certainly is, John, and we could spend a whole program just on an approach letter strategy, but certainly if people are very reluctant to make calls, they might try an approach letter strategy, which basically involves writing a one-page letter on paper, not by email, but on paper, because paper in our society still has weight. Serious people send letters like bankers and lawyers and the IRS. And the reason they do that is because paper has evidentiary value. It has weight in a court of law. So people tend to know this and they tend to take paper-based letters more seriously than email because it's documented. It has to be put into a file. A human being has to look at it. It also shows respect. When you're thoughtful enough to sit down and compose a letter, it shows respect for that person's time and priorities, that they can deal with the letter according to their time and priorities. And it also shows your ability to communicate. When you write a one-page letter that's clear, concise, and coherent, it demonstrates an essential workplace skill that all managers look for, the ability to communicate in writing and through business communications.
Now, What about just dropping by? If you haven't been successful making calls, you just show up and ask to speak with Ralph Smith.
Yeah, for some people that's even more intimidating than making a phone call. And of course, you always encounter the issue of a gatekeeper, whether it's a receptionist or some other, security guard or some other gatekeeper guarding the castle from interlopers like yourself trying to break in through the castle gates to see the king. It's not always easy, but it's worth a try because you might get lucky. You might meet the boss who's replacing the receptionist for the lunch hour, or who got called away suddenly because one of her kids is sick, or because the receptionist, it's a male, hasn't come back from his lunch hour run yet, or whatever the case might be. You might get lucky. And you also gives you a chance to build rapport with the receptionist because they are a gatekeeper. They have a certain amount of influence in an organization, and they can make it very easy for you to meet a decision maker.
Yeah, I recall it. And this sounds really strange. I was coaching a client just recently, and she was holding back on making her calls. And then she just up and said, well, I think I'll just drop by. And what startled me is she was more motivated to just drop by than make a phone call. And so I just turned and said, you know, I think you feel more comfortable dropping by, and it certainly is worth the effort. And if that sounds more appealing to you, let's do it and give it a shot. And she's off dropping by and has had good success at doing that. Well, I think we have really gotten into this subject and come up with some excellent, excellent things, George. Let's turn the corner and look at some of these questions, these job seeker questions, and see if we can provide some help there. Have you got a couple of them for us?
I do, John. Let's start with Arnold in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's an easy one. And let's apply some of these principles that we've talked about today to these questions. Arnold says, I have a good job, but this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. My friends say that I would be a good counselor. How do I find out if that is for me? Where does one find vacancy notices for counselors? Well, right away, there's a red flag there. We would counsel you, Arnold, not to look for vacancy notices.
That's right. right on. Okay, we got the red flag taken care of. Any other advice, George?
Scott in Salem says, I'm currently unemployed. Have been a software engineer for a major international software company. I like my profession, but not the stress of my last employer. I really would like to find a more amiable, less pressure work environment.
We'll pick this up after the break, George.
Okay.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley about the wisdom of pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you left us hanging with the statement that we could know the right career for sure, for sure. Those were your very words, that we could know if a future career direction is right and worth any investment of more education.
Right, Evan. Those were my very words. You can know the right career for sure, for sure.
Okay, so how does one know?
Well, let's think about house hunting. You are meeting with a realtor and asking that person to help you find the ideal home that has, say, 3 bedrooms, a good neighborhood, and so on. The realtor does a computer search and finds 5 houses for sale which fit your preferences.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Well, here you have the pictures, and on the computer you can take a virtual tour of each house. Are you ready to make a decision to buy that one?
Well, no, I'm not ready. Virtual reality is good for a start, but I need something more tangible. I mean, I want to see the house. I want to walk in the rooms, look at the backyard.
You mean you want to walk through the house before you buy it, right?
Right.
Well, that is the same approach to selecting your ideal career. You want to meet the person who has your job.
You mean meet face-to-face?
Yes, face-to-face at the job site, not over coffee. To make a confident decision, you need to see, feel, touch, taste, hear, smell, talk, and finally dream. Then you will know for sure, for sure.
So where are you going to find that person? I don't know all the people employed out there in 50 states.
Well, Evan, because this step of career validation is so important, our mid-career advancement services provide that link for our clients to find that person in their city who represents each recommended career.
So the hopeful career seeker can know for sure, for sure.
Yes, he and she can know for sure, for sure.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference, Preferred Counselors, at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
We're back talking about advice for job seekers, and we're at the portion of our show where we're answering job seeker questions. And to help me, I'm joined by Counselor George Dutch, who has over 20 years experience from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors. George, just before the break, you were reading a question from Scott in Salem. Scott is a software engineer. Maybe some of that got cut off with the bumper music for the break. So why don't we just go for the beginning and just read that question, and then let's jump in and try to give some advice here.
Yes, Scott is currently unemployed as a software engineer. He likes his profession, but not the stress of his last employer. So he'd like to find a more amiable, less high-pressure work environment. So he's asking, where do I find companies which have a more reasonable work culture, which cares about its people? So let me take a quick stab at that. The first thing I would say, he's an ideal candidate for a proactive job search. He could contact people on the basis of two things. He could contact his friends and professional colleagues and ask them if they know of any companies that have a more reasonable work culture, and follow up on any references they give him or referrals. And he can also approach companies directly and ask managers in those companies for advice about the kind of work culture that fosters a more positive work environment. Seek their advice. He's trying to establish some criteria for what a positive work environment might be for himself, so he's asking advice of other people, what they think would make a good positive work environment.
Yes. And also, there are usually, for every state, a list of the best companies to work for. Every year, there's a publication that comes out. It usually comes out from that state's business magazine. And that would be a topic to Google. Best companies in Oregon, best companies in Arkansas. And then that would reference to that particular publication. Another excellent resource would be the Professional Association of Machinists, Professional Association of Ambulance Drivers, or Hospital Administrators. There are thousands and thousands. There are over 35,000 professional associations whose members are in all kinds of different occupations, and they can provide what they would call their top 10 or top 100, or even give the criteria for a good workplace. But, George, I'd like to add one other thing. If Scott has been burned, it's very likely that when Scott starts contacting employers and going to interviews, he is going to be somewhat gun-shy. The gun went off. He thought it was on safety. It blew up in his hand. So next time he picks up a gun, he's going to be a little tender. And that means in the interview, he's going to come off cautious, suspicious. Maybe his eyes are squinting. Maybe his arms are folded. And the employer is going to pick up something that bothers them. They're going to say, what's with this guy? He seems to be a little coy or reserved. And so George or Scott is going to have to be very, very careful that he not subliminally communicate the pain of this last situation. I always like to say to clients that you're safe talking to any company, especially because you're concerned about their work ethic and whether they treat people fairly. You're safe in going through the interviewing process. Get the offer. After you get the offer, that is when you ask the question about the work culture. And my favorite procedure would be to say to the hiring person that offered me the job, everything sounds so great here. I'd really like an opportunity to talk to someone that works in this department, somebody that would be my colleague. Who would you recommend? And when I meet with that person, one of the questions I would ask is, what's it like to work here? What are some of the good traits of manager so-and-so, and what are some of the traits you wish were not present that cause you frustration? That'll give you a pretty good idea of what it's like to work there.
Excellent tips.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Kirk in Camas, Washington.
Yes.
He says, I have a bachelor's degree in business and marketing, but do not use this in my present job. I make a living as an auto dealer technician, but want to move into a managerial position. How do I position myself as a management candidate if I have no previous experience? So how would you advise Kirk on using some of the cold, warm calling techniques that we've been talking about today to explore?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting question because Kirk is sensing the stereotype that employers are going to view him by. He's going to be viewed as a mechanic, a technician of an auto dealer. And so he's wondering how he can dodge that, get around it, because he doesn't have managerial experience. Well, the safest thing to rebrand oneself, this is a kind of a branding issue, I think, is to enroll in a community college course in Management 101 and then begin the, not the cold calling, but the warm calling, to seek out an opportunity to learn hands-on what's going on in the workplace to complement what Kirk is learning in the classroom. And the warm leads would come from that professor's former students and even students in the class. So if Kirk represents, I'm a student at XYZ Community College, and I'm doing some research about the class I'm taking is, I wonder if I could have a few minutes of your time. That is that door opener to start a relationship. Now, the thing, I don't know, George, if you're feeling uncomfortable about this, but we still have a credibility gap here. Kirk is saying, I want to be a manager, but I've never done it. First thing that pops in my head is, well, how do you know that that really is suited for you? You got your wish list. So it is going to be important that Kirk have some credibility in order to respond when the employer says, well, how do you know you can manage? Any further thoughts there, George?
Yes, I think that I'm assuming that he would prefer to stay in the industry that he's in now, and the auto industry is huge, of course. I'm sure there are many people, he's not reinventing the wheel, many people that have been in the same position as him. So he should use his contacts in the industry to seek out managers that have come up through the technician ranks and then ask to meet with them for advice. And he could ask them how they got into management and what do they like and dislike about their position and how did their previous position as a technician help prepare them for management.
Bingo.
And what kind of characteristics do they use as a manager that were useful and not useful as a technician? So there's a lot of warm calling that he could do to prospect whether or not he's a good fit for a manager, but also, you know, people tend to stick together, birds of a feather flock together, and he's likely to meet a manager who came up through the ranks, the technician ranks like himself, and might be able to open a door for him or even hire him into a junior management position, give him a chance. There's a lot he can do with warm calling to advance his career.
And if I'm hearing you right, you're saying he has a much better chance going for shop foreman or parts department manager than trying to get a job in the food or apparel retail industry or in high tech or something else. Is that what I hear you saying?
Well, of course, because he's a bit of a content specialist. He knows a lot about the repair and the maintenance of vehicles and auto dealerships. So why throw that content out? Why throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Yeah, exactly. That's excellent. I think that's a really key response there. Any other questions, George?
Yes, we've got time for one more, I think. Carol in Portland says she's a graduate student studying business, and her work experience has been in outside sales. She was hoping that by going to graduate school, she'd get a better idea of what she was suited for and find a specific career goal. It hasn't happened. She's in her last semester. She says, how can I get more focused?
Boy, well, you know, it's a sad situation when somebody pays, goes in debt, actually, probably gets student loans, with the hope, I'm going to go to grad school and I'm somehow by osmosis, I'm going to find myself and find my goal. There's no question, Carol must take some kind of assessment testing to find her goal and then connect with employers. George, we're out of time. Thank you so much for helping with this broadcast today.
You're very welcome, John.
And so that concludes our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert, John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they've not been paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at this same time for our next live broadcast. Say, do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or a Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.